Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On the last of the special three-part conversation, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill speaks with Berkeley Law Professor Stephen Sugarman, a progressive icon in the education choice movement. The two take a deep dive into the landmark Espinoza v. Montana Supreme Court case from earlier this year and illustrate how much of Sugarman's writing was echoed in the majority's 5-4 decision, a decision where Chief Justice John Roberts opined, quote, "A state need not subsidize private education, but once a state decides to do so, it cannot disqualify some private schools solely because they are religious." Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
I do want to talk real quickly about the Espinoza case, and yes, it seems to me that Justice Roberts made exactly the same argument that you made in your 2017 piece, where you said, if you're going to have charter schools, you cannot exclude faith-based institutions because that's discriminatory. If they're willing to do everything else that a charter school does, the fact that they're faith-based shouldn't be the sole reason that you exclude them. And I felt like Justice Roberts made exactly the same made your argument in the Espinoza case, saying if you're going to have voucher programs or scholarship programs, for example, for private schools, you can't then simply eliminate faith-based schools from participating. If they're willing to serve the public good and serve the mission of the scholarship program by servicing these children, just because they're faith-based shouldn't be a rationale for excluding them. So I wanted to make sure I read that correctly. Did Justice Roberts basically take your stuff and use it?
Justice Roberts, yes. Now, there were many, many opinions in the Montana case.
Yeah.
Chief Justice Roberts nonetheless had a majority quarters of his view, and he thought this was like Trinity Lutheran. It was like the school preschool paving case. The government chose to completely exclude faith-based parties from participating in the program. He thought it was unjustified. And he thought it was not like Baby Against Locke, where the fellow wanted to be trained to be a pastor, because that was what he was going to do with his voucher, where not what he was going to study, not where he was going to go. Where he was going to go, you could study a lot of things, non-religious things. It was not a religious school-only organization. And so so he tried to distinguish that. He also distinguished it in another way, which Justice Gorsuch spent a lot more time in his opinion distinguishing, which was that there's a long history about, should the United States government fund the training of ministers, of priests? And there was a lot of debate and discussion about this around the time of the formation of the Constitution, the adoption of the First Amendment. There's a lot of difference of opinion about this, because in other countries, the governments sometimes would fund these. And it turns out that people don't realize that in all the other well-to-do Western democracies, like England and France and Spain and so on, religious schools that educate kids in the K to 12 range get funded by the government. These faith-based schools get funded as long as they're providing, meet state requirements as to what they have to do, like our charter schools have to. And they have to, you know, be educating kids on this public terms, but they're able to be faith-based schools. We're the only country that doesn't. You know what? Maybe we have good reason for that because of our history. So we have this difference, and there was this battle. And I think the feeling by Justice Roberts and by Gorsuch certainly was, well, funding ministers is one thing, but that's not what's going on in charter schools. Charter schools are not training people to be ministers. They're educating little kids, right, young children, right? So therefore, this should be viewed as much more like Trinity Lutheran than Locke against me. Justice Roberts is very cautious in his opinions. He doesn't like to overrule prior cases. He didn't want to overrule Locke against Davy. So he distinguished it. Whether his distinguishing it is very convincing is another matter, but he tried to distinguish it because it said this total exclusion based upon religion was different. It was as though he thought the focus should be on the schools that were trying to provide an option for families to use their scholarships. The actual plaintiffs in the case were not the schools. They were the families who wanted to use their scholarships, publicly funded scholarships. That was Montana was trying to model the Florida program on a much, much smaller scale. It was as though it was the schools who were being discriminated against, which they were, as well as the families wanting to use those schools. The other judges saw this, no, this was discrimination against the families, and the discrimination against the families was not allowed because it violated the free exercise laws. Therefore, the Montana case theoretically preserves some play in the joints, or theoretically, at least certainly preserves Dock against Davy, and states are not going to be required to fund the education of ministers. But that doesn't mean that they aren't going to be required to fund faith-based charter schools who come along and apply to us. Interestingly enough, Montana does not have charter schools. One of the handful of states doesn't have any charter schools. And the Catholic schools there are thinking about, what should we do now? Should we try to get a charter school program adopted in Montana that would include us? I mean, they're sort of in a very strange position. Virtually every other state, people can come forward and ask for, we want a charter, but there's no charter to be asked for in Montana yet. They have to create a whole new regime of chartering before they could, faith-based schools could apply for that. So I'm not sure, actually, whether my idea will be first tried out in Montana or tried out elsewhere. It could some other state. Somebody else now could come along and try to ask. So one thing that's important, just last thing to say here, Montana lawyers tried to justify the exclusion of these Catholic schools from the scholarship program on the grounds that it would violate their version of the Blaine Amendment. After the Civil War, there was a great amount of anti-Catholic bigotry in this country and a great fear by many Protestant leaders that Catholics were streaming in as immigrants in large numbers from countries like Ireland, Italy, and other places. And they were bringing with them not only the wrong values and the wrong behaviors, but the wrong religion. And they didn't like this. And they wanted to force all these, to the extent possible, force all these kids who these families were bringing with or having once they got here to go to public schools. The Catholics saw the public schools as actually Protestant schools. They viewed the Protestant public schools as Protestant. Why? Because they had Protestant prayer and Protestant Bibles, Bible reading and training, and other things that seemed natural to the operators of public schools because they were all Protestants, but in fact they were Protestant-based. They decided we're going to have to create our own schools. And then the concern was, they're going to be asking for money for their schools, just like we see in all these other countries. And so there was a campaign to try to be sure that we stop governments from giving money to support Catholic schools. And so Congressman Blaine first tried to get a constitutional amendment to the federal constitution to prevent this sort of thing. That almost passed, but it didn't get enough, quite, it was one or two states short. So he then went to the states, and more than 30 states passed Blaine amendments. They're called that because he was the promoter of this, but they didn't use exactly the same language. And in the history since then, particularly in recent years, the Supreme Courts of those states have read rather similar language to mean very different things. They wouldn't allow certain kind of voucher plans, but they allow your scholarship despite Blaine amendments. They say it's not, Blaine amendments only block funding to schools, not to families. I mean, so it's, what do they really mean? It's a little unclear. Nonetheless, these were very openly hostile. And Montana lawyers relied on their Blaine Amendment to say, look, we cannot, not only do we not want to have these Catholic schools, we cannot. And the Supreme Court said, no, the First Amendment Free Exercise Clause trumps, which it certainly does, the Blaine Amendment. Now, it's not clear that they mean the Blaine Amendment is unconstitutional in all respects, but it certainly is unconstitutional to the extent that it excludes them from participating in a Florida-like school scholarship program where people direct their tax money to a nonprofit and then gives money to people as scholarships, particularly low-income families, to go to private schools of their choice, which turn out to be mostly religious schools, because that's what religious schools are. When you think about it, why don't you have more, or why don't other states have more non-religious private schools? Why don't they get created so they can get access to your scholarships, or they can get access to other kinds of state aid. The answer is they become charter schools instead. Right. Charter schools give them a lot more money. So the private schools that aren't faith-based now, the newly created innovative ones, they're going to become charter schools. They're not going to become private voucher-funded or private school scholarship-funded because they get more money if they're charter. So they've created this kind of artificial gulf now, leaving the private sector largely to faith-based education. Catholic schools, which used to dominate, used to be 90-plus percent of the private school sector, have fallen down to maybe 50% now, as Catholics have had fewer families. They've had to charge more for their some smaller families. They had to charge more for their schools as they created new schools in the suburbs. Sometimes Catholic families move to the suburbs. We're going to try the public schools. They are happy enough with that. For various, we now want a free or almost free labor from nuns anymore. So Catholic schools have a very different situation, and they have 2.5 million instead of 5 million, let's say, people going to them. But evangelical schools, particularly evangelical Protestant schools, and some Jewish schools, but mostly Protestant schools, have come in and created large numbers of new schools. These schools are sometimes pretty good, sometimes pretty bad. These are families who have very strong faith commitments and very strong hostility to what they view as the public schools as being hostile to their faith. So they want something for their kids. And they see this as what they want. If they could become charter schools and get much more funding, because these are often working class or low-income families, these evangelicals who don't have a lot of money to spend on education, they could get charter school funding. They could hire better teachers, they could educate their kids better, but they could also give them the faith-based instruction that they're eager for them to have. That could be something they could do if they could become charter schools.
Well, it's going to be exciting to see how it plays out. And I just think it's cool that you wrote this piece, and it looks like it's all coming to fruition, just like you articulated. So that's, at least I think that's exciting. I hope you find that exciting also.
You know, what I say is that I'm very pleased that it looks like we might be moving in that direction. It isn't for sure, just because Catholic schools now and people who want to send their Catholic school, kids to Catholic schools or other religious schools who get scholarships of the sort that Step Up for Students gives, these doesn't guarantee that charters can be faith-based. Because we have to conceive of them as being private first. Because if they're public, then if we conceive of them as being public, then it looks like public religious schools. Well, we can't have public religious schools. We can't have prayer in public schools, so public schools can't be religious.
Right.
So what are charters? So it's ambiguity, fundamental ambiguity as to how we should conceive of charter schools. But if we do move in that direction, it'll be very nice to see. Now, I may just say one other thing, you might be able to use this or not use this. Justice Breyer said, as I look at this Montana situation, it feels more like the Washington State scholarship program for the minister. These are people who wanting religious education. He wanted religious education. They want funding to be able to use to get religious education. He wanted funding to be able to get. It feels more like that to me than it does like paving preschools. He said, so in these cases, these difficult cases where we have to make a judgment in the play in the joints as to which category it falls into, does it fall into the religious discrimination category of paving preschool playgrounds, or does it fall into the inappropriate helping to become funding of ministers? Which category is it? Judges have to make a decision, a discretionary decision as to which it feels like them to be more like. And he says, I think this is more like the minister funding case.
Right.
But he admits it's not the same, and maybe it's a close question. Justice Roberts, on behalf of the majority, says, we don't want judges to be making these calls. We want clearer rules.
Right.
When you completely exclude religion, then that's going to be a clear rule. We're not going to have kind of discretion anymore as to decide what to do. And they didn't completely exclude religious rules in the minister education case. But in any event, so there's also a fundamental disagreement between the judges as to what the role of court would be in resolving this tension between the free exercise clause and the establishment clause.
Yeah.
So I would say it's a really, Roberts, I think, is a Gorsuch was not convinced, really. He did sign on the opinion, but he offered his own views. Justice Thomas wrote a separate opinion, a rather strange opinion, complaining about how the court had been deciding Establishment Clause cases. Didn't seem to be relevant to this case. Justice Alito has a very, very strident, very hostile to the Blaine Amendment opinion, which shows about all the Catholic bigotry that drove the Blaine Amendments. And because Roberts didn't make that a main focus of his.
Right.
For him, was it a book, you exclude religion completely? We don't have to go back to the history as to why we got there and so on. Alito wanted in the record this anti-religious backdrop to what explains how we got to where we are. So we don't have the same kind of religious hostility towards Catholics that we had in the just after the Civil War, but we do still have some religious strife. And the question is, do you make religious groups get along better when you allow families to pursue their faith through the education of their children? Or would you get along better if we tried to prevent them from doing that? Oregon at one point tried to force everyone to go to public schools. And in 1920, around then, the Supreme Court said in the Pierce case, no, you have a constitutional right to go to a private, including a private religious school. That opinion still stands. I think that probably most Americans agree with that. Whatever they think about religion, they might not be like religion, they may not be religious themselves, but they think probably that families who want to choose to have religious education, their kids ought to be able to do so. And one of the advantages of allowing faith-based schools is that people who are very hostile to public schools can remove themselves from those schools and have some alternative for their own families and not be spending their time trying to turn public schools into quasi-religious schools, which they can't.
Well, you know, our friend, mutual friend Charlie Glenn has done a lot of research on this and feels pretty strongly that allowing families to educate children in schools that reflect their religious faith actually strengthens the whole cohesion of our democracy. He did a big study recently on Muslim children coming into the country, used some of the Florida schools as part of that study, and found that the kids' assimilation into the country was greatly enhanced by their ability to transition in through a Muslim school, for example.
And we also have evidence that actually Catholic kids who go to Catholic schools end up being more civically engaged, vote more often, participate more in public affairs than similar Catholic kids grow up having gone to public school. So I think that's something that's really important to take into account, that people are able to have their own faith but be tolerant of other faiths and be supportive of democratic values. Not everybody's like that, but that's an important feature that I think we achieve through diversity.
Yeah.
My colleague Jack Koons calls subsidiarity.
Yeah. Well, Steve, you've been very, very generous with your time, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate it. I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much.